Hello everyone, my name is Timofey Yegorov. I am the trainer of cosmonauts at the Gagarin Cosmonauts Training Center in Russia. Also, I am the general director of the Association Ecology of the Unknown, which is the most recognized organization in Russia dealing with the study of the UFO and all the anomalous phenomena.
What's it like being a trainer of cosmonauts or astronauts?
Well, it's a very interesting job. You know, all the astronauts and cosmonauts, they are great people. Really, they are heroes to go to space, to risk their lives. So they are trained very well. And you can imagine going into space on a booster, actually on a bomb, which can explode if something goes wrong. And they have a great opportunity to see our planet from the side. And I guess it's a feeling that you will never forget.
And what exactly is the Association Ecology of the Unknown? How long has this group been engaged in research about UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomena?
It was established informally in 1976, and officially it was registered as a non-governmental, non-profit organization in 2019. But it has been there since 1976, as I have already said. And it started with one man whose name was Felix Ziegel. He was a professor of the Moscow Aviation Institute. He was the first man in Russia to study the UFOs and to treat this phenomenon seriously. And he wrote many books, one of them I have here on my table. It's The Phenomenon of UFO, it says in Russian, Felix Ziegel. So, and since then, there was a group of people, his friends, his colleagues, who were looking into this phenomenon. But he was ridiculed many times. He was he had some problems at his job because he was dealing with the study of this phenomenon. But nevertheless, this organization grew, and since 1990, we gather a conference, which is called after his name. It's Ziegel Readings. It is held twice a year. It's an international public scientific conference where people from all cities of Russia and from other countries as well come together and speak about different anomalous phenomena. They study as well as UFOs and many, many other things. So since 1990, it was held twice a year, but there was a short break when there was pandemic since 2020. And on the 22nd of October 2022, finally, the 54th conference was held. And it's a great luck. It was very interesting. I also was there and I spoke there. So this is a non-governmental organization. So as you can see from what I have told you, it gathers people from all Russia who know something, who study something interesting. So the UFO as well.
So what got you personally interested in this type of subject? What was the first thing that got you started down this this research?
Well, I met one man, actually the president of the Association Ecology of the Unknown. As I have a relation to space, I train cosmonauts, we became friends, and he told me what he was doing, and I was very interested because in my life, I also had an experience when there were three people in the night coming to me through the wall, and I couldn't explain that at that moment. I was paralyzed in the blue light. So later, when I began to look into this phenomenon, I understood that maybe it was one of the cases where the extraterrestrials come and you become paralyzed with the light and they do something to you. I can speak about a little bit maybe more if you're interested, but the previous time I thought I have already told you about that.
Yeah, you have already told me, so I would just tell people who haven't heard that story before to check out the previous interview that I did with Timofey, and you can have a look at his details on that story that he has, that personal experience. Have you guys ever, in terms of the AEU, have you looked into any sort of government reverse engineering, any sort of hidden programs?
One of the members of the association, who is also a member of one of the biggest research groups in Russia as well, named Kosmopoisk, they retrieved some objects, and to my knowledge, they even tried to build a time machine.
A time machine.
Yes.
Can you explain a little?
I don't know. I don't know much in details, but they built a sphere, some kind of a sphere, and they studied some electromagnetic impact on human placed inside the sphere. So it was based on their knowledge about what they researched before and what they have found. I don't know a lot of details, but they tried to build a time machine, and to my knowledge, they didn't succeed. But as one person said someday that once there was a case when one human who was doing some reverse engineering, it was not in Russia, he encountered an ET and he looked him in the eyes, and the ET said, "You cannot use what does not belong to you."
Can you remember what case that is? I
I
can't
cannot
remember.
remember. But the interesting thought that we can draw from this case is the following, and it is more oftenly we encounter it when we deal with the UFOs. In my opinion, what he was trying to say is this. To use some technology, you have to be at the certain level of your consciousness. So at the seven certain level of your ethics. For example, everybody can buy an X, for example, an X in a store, and you can figure out how to use the X to chop trees. If you never saw one. When you see it, you can understand there's a sharp blade, and you can If you hit hard, you can chop some tree or whatever. But when you find some things from other worlds, to understand how it works, you have to be on a different level. Because by just inspecting the parts, which is it is composed of, just examining what is inside, outside, and trying to figure out how it works, it's not sufficient to turn it on. Because maybe this craft, they operate like living beings. Like in the movie Avatar, you have to connect with it to turn it on or to operate. Did you see the movie Avatar?
Yeah, of course. I know exactly what you're talking about. This idea that you have to connect your consciousness, your awareness with the technology, and that there is a relationship between the mind and the vehicle.
Yes, and so I guess my guess is that this is how they work. We cannot understand them and until we reach some level of our consciousness that we can look at it from a very different angle that we cannot imagine now. We cannot imagine. We only see some solid object, some parts, but the connection between and how it works, it's just out of our mind, out of our consciousness.
If this and is... No, sorry, go on. Continue.
Yeah, and this is sort of a pass that you can get to use this technology, because it's like a safety measure to for this technology to be
to stop
able,
a, stop
able
a
to
child
be used,
prevent a child from driving it, basically.
Yeah, because what we think of when we get some new technology in the first place, how to use this in war, how
exactly,
to
yeah.
military application, and you can go on and go on.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up this whole technology and consciousness connection, because what's interesting to me about this, if it's true, if you need to expand your consciousness, expand your awareness to higher levels to be able to use that technology, what does that really say about the technology? Because those higher levels, those higher levels of consciousness are basically, it's a spiritual thing. It's essentially, it's a spiritual thing. The idea that you're awakening to a new state of awareness, that you're seeing reality in a larger picture, and that the methods to expand your mind usually come from spiritual methods like meditation and things like this, right? So if that is what's needed to be able to pilot the UFO, What does that say about the UFO? It's like a spiritual technology. I mean, what do you think these things are? Are they just aliens from another planet, or is this something a little stranger than just another species in space?
It's a great question, and we have already thought about this. And here's what we have found. Imagine. You said spiritual, but it's only a term in our language, spiritual.
Yeah.
But imagine a piano. There is a keyboard, and you could play notes starting from the lowest one up to the highest one. That's the notes you can play. And usually, 99% of the cases, these notes are enough for each person in the world to compose any music he likes or she likes. So this keyboard is, I imagine that this is our physical body. But The sounds and the notes are not limited to the keyboard. There are notes with higher pitches than you can play on piano and lower pitches. And this goes like forever from the minus infinity to the plus infinity, the notes you can play. And all these notes, which are beyond the keyboard, are not spiritual. They are physical. They exist, but you cannot play them with your fingers. But you can hear them with your ear. You can invent a different instrument to play, and you can hear the highest and the lowest notes as well. So this, which is beyond the keyboard, let's say that's our consciousness. But if we are concentrated only on playing the keyboard, we can then learn to play piano. But we can also draw our attention beyond. We can expand. And then we can learn how to operate other pitches. That's just an analogy. And then this, which is beyond keyboard, we call it spiritual. But this is physical, just a different level of vibration. Are you following?
I'm following you. I'm just listening.
Yes. So this technology involves it demands that you know how to operate those frequencies, how to play them, and how to build harmonies, because you want to play music, and how to go beyond the keyboard. That's just another evolutionary step for us, to not only concentrate on our keyboard, but expand our consciousness, as you said it earlier. So this technology involves the knowledge of how those pitches work, but they are just regular pitches for those species who have already gone there beyond this keyboard, and they have their own limits, but more than us humans, and they can play that music, and we can hear it, and we can see their craft, because that's the part that I like best. When you play a note, any note, there's a fundamental frequency, and there are harmonics. So the fundamental frequency is the one that your brain perceives like the note that you're hearing. But simultaneously, you hear all these harmonics, but they are just lower in volume. And they go on forever from the fundamental frequency. And there are also subharmonics. So this is how the spiritual is represented on the keyboard. When you play a note, you hear the fundamental frequency, your brain perceives it, but actually what sounds is the fundamental frequency and all the harmonics above it and below it. So this is how their vehicles maybe are represented in our world in 3D, as they say. But they involve all these harmonics. And if we go deep into studying this, we have to expand our consciousness first beyond the keyboard. And then we can understand how it works and what these technologies are. And then we can understand how to use them. But when we understand, we are at the different level of consciousness, and that involves ethics as a safety measure. So that's an analogy that helps us to understand what is spiritual, what is physical. Actually, there is no boundary between that. What is spiritual for us may be physical for some other people or species or extraterrestrials. And everything is concentrated here on our keyboard. So,
yeah, I gather from what you're saying, it just comes down to we have a very strict channel of senses and observation as a human, and that we need to in some way develop methods through which we can begin to make clearer the wider picture. And it makes me think about technology, because people are very concerned about technology for good reasons. Obviously, there are the threats of nuclear annihilation and control and surveillance and all of the things that we worry about with technology. So some people would say that conscious expansion or spiritual expansion can't take place through technology because technology is separate from us. But when you look back on all of human history, we've been developing technologies. From the first time we sharpened a stick and made a spear, or hit two rocks together and made sparks and made flames, these are all extensions of the human influence through technologies. So I kind of go back and forth on this problem of whether or not this is just evolutionary development. Is this just human evolution to develop more complex systems, more complex networks, more complex technology, and that this is in some way going to build towards a better and brighter future, and we'll be able to realize deep truths about reality through our technological sophistication? Or have we gone down the wrong road? Are we heading towards the destruction of the human species through focusing on technology? Could it provide an answer for these questions, or is it not enough? Do we need something else?
I believe that you can do whatever you want and whatever you can, but there is one thing which can hinder everything that you do, or it can help everything. And this thing is ego. The ego, which lives inside humans, that's something really alien to humans, we believe. And why do I say this? I'm not the first to say it. There is a cohort of Russian scientists, we call them cosmists, which said that a century ago, that to explore space, the outer space, humanity will first have to become one being. It will first have to transmit from divide and conquer to cooperation by eliminating the ego. Because the ego lives at the expense of struggle. If there is struggle, rivalry, competition, it will always ruin everything you do. Because space exploration, okay, who will be the first? Maybe we need some weapons to secure our assets in space. Who will first go to moon? Let's try to blow an atomic bomb there and see what happens, and so on. But the exploration of space is a good thing, and the technology to travel through space is a great thing. If you really go there with a peaceful purpose, with something that strengthens life, not destroys it. And from this point of view, whatever you do, it will work for the good, for the benefit of humanity, for the higher good. And if there is some your ego thoughts, some competition, it will always ruin everything. Because, well, it's divide and conquer. When we're divided, we're weaker. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. So
how do we get out of this mess? How do we get out of the problem of being divided and tribalistic and not in tune with our highest ethics and values? There are some options that I see out there in terms of things that might shift us towards removing more of the ego, but there is certainly a lot of it in the world, and it's going to take a lot of energy to get rid of that.
Here in Russia, we have some methods, and we are already working in this direction, and association ecology of the unknown as well. We have developed a science that we called psychoenergetics, and it is closely connected with what Russian cosmists said, because they studied the methods of direct communication between a living body and the surrounding environment. So communication through resonance, through the levels of vibrations. Maybe I'm not speaking correctly because of a lack of terms in English.
I understand. No, you're speaking correctly.
So
you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job, Timofey.
Thank you. So this psychoenergetics, why it is called so? Because our human psyche, it also works very similar, like electricity. There are fields generated by our brain, and the human body generates fields. Each organ of the body has its own frequency of vibrations. And in the training of cosmonauts, in building rockets, they also take into account, because when the booster goes up, there are vibrations, hard vibrations with low frequencies. And if it comes with resonance with some organs, internal organs of your body, they may go in resonance and they may tear apart. So they studied it very carefully, and each organ of the body and has its own level of vibrations, really physical, and that generates different fields around the body. And we communicate with the surrounding world through these vibrations, and through not only these vibrations that are known today in the current scientific paradigm, but some higher vibrations which are associated with consciousness, telepathy, and non-local communication. So when you're very, 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 very far away, and you can instantly get information. And there were many experiments in Russia as well, of course, with military purpose mm-hmm. as well, but in peaceful purposes also. So this psychoenergetics studies these communications and this cause and effect relations. And it goes beyond that to study how emotions of humans affect the body, affect the surrounding world, and the events that are happening with a human. And we have found that this relation is very strong. Really, our human body is the manifestation of our emotions. Because as they say, humans are born in love. And because of love, it really it is so. When there is this first cell, and I didn't remember who did this experiment, but they shot a laser through the DNA, and they saw a hologram of a cell, of a future cell. So this sounds like a science fiction today, but it is true that our body is a manifested emotion, and what you think, what you do, everything is taken into account, and nothing is random. So the psychoenergetics gives you this knowledge to transform this the ego that is inside, because we treat it like a virus, because it behaves like a virus. It is transmitted to next generations. It can evolve, it can multiply itself through its qualities, through the emotions that it makes you feel. Like you think that this is you feeling this hatred or maybe envy, all these emotions that we call negative. Of course, they impact, influence you in a negative way. But this is ego producing it, with you not knowing it or not paying attention. If you know about this, you can find methods and techniques to see this and to change the situation, to consciously transform this when you have this feeling of feeling aggression or hatred or you name it. You can turn it, flip the coin, and take this energy and put it in a peaceful, in a more efficient way. Otherwise, it will feed this ego, which ruins everything by taking your energy. And this is a global situation. We believe that humanity is very sick with this ego, with this virus of ego. That's how we treat it. And this new science, which we call psychoenergetics, gives you ways and methods how to transform it, how to get out of this evolutionary dead end. And it explains how it works.
Have you ever taken any kind of like, or have you researched? Maybe I should ask that. That's probably a better question so that you don't get yourself in any trouble. Have you researched psychedelic substances and the effects of psychedelic substances? Because this, to me, at least, is one avenue where the dissolving of ego occurs very quickly. And people have made the argument to me that meditation or other forms of expanding the mind would be preferable to psychedelics because it's something that you're taking externally and this is all accessible within your mind already. You shouldn't need a psychedelic to access these states. But as you said, we are sick with a virus of ego. And it's not easy to convince a lot of people to engage in meditation or to, you know, sit and get into their minds. But when you take a psychedelic, for example, you don't have a choice. You're going to be taken to that place. Your mind is going to be placed into another state. And it has a very good track record of taking people out of the ego, connecting them with everything around them, giving them a sense of oneness, a sense of unity with all things. So perhaps the research of psychedelic substances could be one of the methods that we use to rapidly dissolve the ego because we need to be fast acting. It needs to be a rapid dissolution at this point because we're in trouble. We're in trouble. We're on a very near edge to serious problems for humanity. And so perhaps one of the fast acting tools that can be utilized is psychedelics.
That's a great question. And I'm glad that you've asked.
Thank you.
Well, maybe my answer will be long, but
please take your time.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I didn't do psychedelics, but I have some friends of mine that did, and they told about their experience. Second is, yes, I believe that psychedelics give you this momentary, this rapid expansion of consciousness, and you really can see things and experience and see through the walls and see extraterrestrials and communicate with them. But, you know, this is working in a chemical way in your body, and this brings really may bring you harm to your body. Of course, they say that drugs are bad. Don't do drugs. This can cause you serious problems. This is true for some drugs, really. Maybe for psychedelics, it's not true, and they don't want you to take it because you will see things as they are. But the third part of my answer is, really, you don't need psychedelics to experience this. And you can do it fast. And what allows you to do it fast is just your decision. Well, human is such a great multidimensional being, and we really don't know ourselves. Sometimes we think that we made a decision, but really we didn't. For example, I decided to give up smoking, and I say to myself every day, but really I don't give up smoking, because really I didn't make this decision. I know deep in my heart or soul that I like smoking, and well, it maybe harms me, but I really need it, because not in a bad way. I really need it because it makes me feel good, and feeling good is a better thing for me to be efficient than I give up smoking and I will feel bad and I will do nothing. So this is how us humans really are inside, maybe different outside. But if I deeply realized that, really I physically realized that I don't need smoking anymore, and I make the decision, I will not smoke, and I will not do it. Because from that moment, I take this energy of my decision, I realize that I just turn my head, and all the energy I apply in a different place. And I get this good feeling from knowing that I do not smoke anymore, because I don't need, because that's just a different me.
But Timothy, there's one issue with that. There's one issue, and it's the fact that you say you deeply realized and made a decision. And what I'm saying with the whole psychedelic perspective is that to make people make that decision, to have that realization, you need a catalyst. You need something to spark that initial desire. And is it even necessarily the population? Is it maybe just the leaders? Maybe it's just the leadership of the world that needs to make that kind of change, because they're the ones that control the way we move through history. It's the people in our governments and in our institutions that maybe need to have that sudden deep realization and change.
As you said, you are okay with existing like this, with not paying attention to some anomalous phenomena, UFOs, consciousness. You're okay with working at your job and living a life living the life that you live, and it's okay. Because you cannot force anyone, because it will not work. But not 100% of the population will have to make this decision, because on a bigger scale, we are one organism which is called humanity, and there are 80% of people just have to just leave and be okay and feel good, and maybe 20% are like leaders who guide the humanity, and not necessarily they are in power or they are our governments. It may be just ordinary people, because this system of our government and hierarchy of authorities is just that we invented someday on the basis of our egos. But really, humanity is one living organism. And if you or me or whoever makes this decision, it's a contribution instantly. And you can say to yourself, I am the humanity. I am the humanity. And it will be true. And I decide to not perish on this planet. I decide to not disappear. I decide to heal, and I will heal. And as you take this decision to resonate in this way, it instantly transmits directly to other people, regardless of are they feeling it, are they aware of it. If they know anything about consciousness or energetics, it doesn't matter, because we work in the same way. And this resonance will change step by step the people around you. And not only those people who are really around you, physically present in your room or in your city, but the whole of humanity, because we live in one field, like one field of humanity, like one organism. You know, when somewhere your toe is hurt, like you hit something, the whole body feels it, that somewhere there I hurt myself. Like, and this way, the whole universe feels that something is wrong with humanity somewhere. The cell of its body, of the universe, humanity, is sick. But it will heal. And it will heal if we decide. And the answer to your question of psychedelics is that you can experience these states by exercising this methods and things that we have developed. Well, in English they only have one word, meditation. But in Russian we have different words. It's not exactly meditation. Like it's a permanent meditation. You don't have to sit. You don't have to be in a quiet place. You don't have to be torn apart of things you do. You can do it wherever you are, in any surroundings. Because it's not some yoga practice or something. We live in a very rapidly changing world. We don't have time to sit down and meditate. We have to permanently meditate. But it's not exactly meditation. It's just knowing how you are structured and using these abilities. And over time, you understand that you can predict events that are going to happen. You can remote view. It's like flashes in your brain because we only start to know ourselves. I have these things too. Like I'm going to park my car and I instantly remotely view that there's this one place free there. And I go there and there is the place I can park my car. But I can, sometimes you can read somebody's mind. You think, oh, we thought in the same way. But what happened is you read each other's minds. This thought instantly appeared. It's non-local communication. And many things like this are happening that we used to not pay much attention to them, like deja vu, or some things that really are the manifestations of this direct communication with the world. It's not some dreamy things or some hallucinations or spiritual things. These are real things, only which we don't know yet, but we can experience. And telepathic communication is also real. And reading each other's minds. And if we expand our consciousness like this, if we decide to go on this path of evolution, then there comes the realization that what blocks us from doing this is our ego. It's like something put on your eyes like this, and you cannot see anything. You have to work with this first, and then you go. And it, simultaneously, well, it's multidimensional. It's not like linear. So this is what I'm trying to explain, but words are not enough.
No, you're doing a good job, and I agree with you. This is my perspective as well. And you know, you can look at the human being as a generator of fields, and those fields interact with all the other fields that surround us in space and time and around this planet, and that we can in some ways influence through our resonance, through our emotional resonance, through the way that we see life. We can influence reality itself. And you know, to me, I have to think to myself, if this is true, if this is correct, the way that we think about this, the fact that we know it, you and me and other people listening, that means that those who are in levels of extreme power and influence obviously know it. If it's something to be known and is true, they will know the mechanics of mind and reality and how it impacts manifestation, all of that kind of thing. So it makes me wonder why the media is a constant vehicle of ego, competitiveness, fear. It's all of these emotions that you're saying we shouldn't be engaging with, these emotions that are leading us down the road towards destruction. And these are the emotional catalysts or aggravators that are put out into society through all of these different kind of establishment channels. And it makes me concerned because I wonder what the true motive is. What is the true motive there? Is that to keep us from realizing our true potential? How do you feel about the way in which information is displayed to us as civilians, and does that have an impact on the reality we're in?
That's a great question, and I'll try to answer. There is this system which you described, this media which constantly repeats it over and over, this hypnotic suggestion. It's the system of ego. It's the ego system which really drains your vital energy, the energy of your emotions. And this is the most tasty energy for them, for the ego. And it is built so to get this energy from humanity, because it's like a parasite in the body of humanity. The ego is the parasite. Someday, I don't remember when it get into, and it's like a parasite that takes your energy away. And that's why through humans, when your attention is drawn to this ego and you think that you are your ego, it's like in the movie Matrix. It's like in the Matrix, just it's 100% correct. You live in this virtual reality, really. You have the potential, your body, you have the potential, enormous potential to evolve, to use these powers that human body has. As I said, telepathy, anything, non-local communication, these new technologies that we can make. But it's like already it boils down to this ego and this reality of Matrix. When you're sleeping, you're really sleeping, and you think that you leave and you see things, you go to your job, and this is how it gives you the sensation of life, but really you're sleeping. But if you're awake, let's say, if we continue this analogy, if you're and have you seen the movie Matrix? Yeah.
Oh, of course. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I love The Matrix.
Yeah. And if you're awake, then you can consciously go into the Matrix to talk with people and maybe to get them out of the sleep, like they did with Neo. They suggested you take the red pill or the blue pill. Nobody forces you. You want to know the truth. You may not like it, but yeah, I want. So that's how they take them out of the sleep. And the real world was really the world of machines, which conquered humanity and put them into sleep. But they cannot live without humans' energy,
mm-hmm.
because they take the energy out of the humans. They cannot destroy humanity because they need it as an energy source. They cannot destroy. They wouldn't want to destroy. But over time, they put them in the situation, this ego system, the world of machines and metrics. They put them in the situation when energy is so low, if it goes down more, it may collapse and the earth can collapse. And because of wars, because of this very, very hot competition, which is gone to the extent of war, of self-destruction, it's the highest, the most powerful competition is the war, when you destroy, and even if you destroy physically. They wouldn't want that, because then they will lose their reality with humanity. And this is the situation we are in, and some of us are awake, like Neo and his team and Morpheus, if we continue the analogy with Matrix. And the reality is not so good, but we have the opportunity to change it. But people need to take the red pill. You cannot just unplug and put them into reality, because they have to take this decision. Maybe this analogy is not 100% correct, because it's not so like in a movie, so linear. It's multidimensional, but the overall feeling is this the feeling of the movie Matrix.
Well,
but
one
it's
of,
oh, excuse me,
no,
one
no,
more
go
thought.
Ahead, go
One
ahead,
more thought.
go ahead.
It's not so bad as in Matrix, because everything really is in our hands. I don't know how to explain it. Because we have to stay positive. Otherwise, if we stay negative, then it's really no way out.
Well, perhaps one of the red pills, or one of the people coming into the Matrix to free everyone's minds, is the UFO phenomenon. The UFO phenomenon is literally by just existing. Just by existing, it proves that there is more. It proves that there is more beyond what we believe to be real. It wakes people up if they experience it. So it's almost like a red pill or a psychedelic. If you see an example of paranormal phenomena that's not considered normal, if you actually witness this for yourself, then it becomes impossible to go back to that state of being asleep. You know, this is essentially an antidote for being stuck in the Matrix, is the UFO phenomenon. And perhaps there is an increase in sightings, there is an increase in reportings. Who knows? Maybe there will be some unveiling from the phenomena. Maybe it will be it will make its presence known in a more direct way. Is that something that you think could be possible, that perhaps something is coming?
That's such a great analogy, such a great example that you gave.
Oh, thank you.
Because really, it's the red pill, but it's only a pill. You have to take it. The very thought that we are alone in the universe it's a very good example of manifestation of self-centeredness. In the whole universe, one living race is humanity. Really? This is the example of living in a matrix, in a virtual reality, stuck in it, and don't even want to see or know anything. As you know, in the movie Matrix, there was Cypher, which was awakened, and then he decided to go to sleep. And he said, I want to be an actor, I want to be rich, and give me the blue pill. I said, okay, you're welcome. So some people just like this being here, and they say, oh, that's ridiculous. That's not in our scientific paradigm. So what? Then back in the day, submarines were out of scientific paradigms. Flying jets or smartphones were a miracle. If you go 200 years back, for example, now it's just an everyday routine. Searching on your smartphone, you have all the information in the world. So connecting with and seeing movies, and everything is in your hand. So those UFOs which we see, really, I agree with you. These are red pills given to us by extraterrestrials, by those people who are more wiser than us. But they also cannot force us. They only give us the red pill. And if we take it, then we awake to the reality that we have. Then we realize, oh my God, what we did to our planet. We have to purify the oceans. We have to grow forests. We have to keep the living species so they do not disappear. We have to treat each other with love, respect. Why do we fight? Why? What for? We have to explore space. And there are people, many people out there. And that's the evidence. That's these UFOs, these sightings, these experiences, the stories that contactees tell, those people who saw extraterrestrials really, and who saw these flying saucers. You cannot just get rid of this. I don't want to know it. Well, you can by taking the blue pill, but those people, once again, they cannot force us. They only give us hints. They only give us warnings. Maybe they can adjust something that we maybe. Well, there were cases, well, malfunctions of nukes, and they came and they fixed it. But they cannot just land on your in your yard just for you to know that they are real. Well, you will not believe even if they land, because you think you hallucinate or anything. So yeah, I agree with this analogy, and I think we have to pay more attention to this, because this is the real evidence that we are not alone. And if we're not alone, we must look at ourselves and see, do we behave? Do we stick to the laws, universal, like other people? Maybe we have to fix what we did or what we're doing, fix the planet, and then make friends with our brothers in consciousness.
Yeah, it's such a shame, you know, when you look up at the night sky and you see just all these stars and all these possibilities and, you know, so much, like more than you can even begin to hold in your mind, the possibilities that could be out there. And we are actually at a point where our technologies are getting sophisticated enough that we're able to travel into space. And obviously, within the UFO community, people would say, we've already got those technologies, they're locked up in black projects, we have anti-gravity, etc. If it's true, it's so sad. And by the way, there are fireworks going off, so I apologize if people can hear the fireworks right now. But it's a really sad thing that you have all of this potential and all of this creativity and curiosity, and we're wasting it on fighting each other and being in conflict and, you know, dividing each other politically and ideologically and territorially. And it's just a strange thing. It's there's a brilliant speaker called Terence McKenna. I don't know if you're familiar with Terence McKenna, but yeah, he's passed away now, but he said something that I thought was really interesting in terms of this problem that we seem to be in. And it's like the human being is almost like it's almost like the human being is half animal and half God. And for a lot of our evolution, we're this animal and we're grappling with this kind of animal nature. But there's a part of us that's this much higher, much more ascended spirit. And evolution is this struggle between animal and God, animal and God. And we seem to be in a very interesting time right now because our capabilities are becoming godlike, but we are still an animal and we are territorial. And I just hope that we can get beyond that territorial, primal, animalistic instinct before it destroys us. And I think we will. I actually do think that we will get to a place that's beyond, you know, where we are right now. I am optimistic, but I guess for me, I don't know what the specific cause will be that changes our direction. What is it that's going to change our direction? Is it UFOs? Is it something really extravagant? I'm not sure. I feel like it needs to be a very big, momentous event or something to shake us awake, something to make people kind of wake up out of their sleep, because like you said, it's a big universe and it's worth exploring, and it's a real shame that we're not doing that right now.
Yeah, and really, when you just go outside in the night and you look up at the stars, you really can feel that it's life, that it's a living thing. And this is one of the methods and techniques that you can use to expand your perception, to expand your consciousness. It's just feeling the sky, like expanding your perception to the sky, and it will instantly take you a little above the situation. If you're stuck or if you're in a negative emotional state, you can feel the sky or look at the sky. This simple technique will rise you above so you can see more. Because when you're stuck in a situation, you hardly can understand anything or see the way out. And I guess that's what humanity should do. And luckily, cosmonauts can see our planet from the side. And many of them say that they experience this overview effect to understand, to instantly realize this connection of humanity with the Earth and with the universe. So, as one of Russian cosmists used to say, humanity, excuse me, the Earth is the cradle of humanity. But not all your life you have to live in cradle. You have to grow and leave the cradle and live your life in the universe and travel and explore it. So,
Do you think that we've got to this point before in terms of human civilization? Is this the first time that the human species has got to this decision point, or have we perhaps in other long, long lost histories through cataclysms and destructions of the planet, have we been to this place before, this decision before?
They say that it's the fifth race. So current humanity is the fifth race. It's like the fifth attempt. And before there were nuclear wars and other cataclysms. And I don't know, maybe it's true because there are some archaeological findings of man-made things that go back millions of years. So maybe things from previous races, some strange things they find when they dig into the earth. So, and this this age detection method is very precise, and things date back millions of years. But there was no humanity then. How it could appear? So many findings like this are the evidence of that we are not the first attempt. Maybe it's not a good term, attempt. But what we see now happening in humanity, we believe that this attempt, excuse me, this fifth race is the point when the higher powers, let's call them so, the higher forces of the universe said that they've had enough, and they interfered into humanity's evolution by changing the structure of space and time. And before, over time, it was linear from past to the future. We lived from past to the future, and we projected our emotions, our deeds on the future. So if we destroy now, it will be destroyed in the future. And from this time, it is the opposite. The future is projected on us, and the future comes to us. We're not moving in the future comes to us. And we can find ourselves in the future if we change. We live in an informational field. The Russian cosmists of the past called it noosphere. Noosphere is this informational field which is generated by humanity, only by humanity. And all the information in the world is stored there. And you can get an instant access to this field. And in some writings, they call it Akashi.
The Akashic records. Yeah.
The Akashi records.
Drawing inspiration from the ether, intuition.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So, by tapping into this source, you can get information and knowledge, but not in a way that we're used to. Like you come into a liquor store, you pay money, and you get what you want. Not in this way. In a way that the higher powers will give you this knowledge if you're true and pure in your intentions and your level of ethics is at the certain level. Like you, as you said in the very beginning, you cannot use what does not belong to you. And the extraterrestrials know it. When you're a certain level, you can just know it, like a download or like a realization that it is so, it works so, and you see the manifestations of it in your life. And if you study it in a more scientific way, you can find the explanation to this through this new scientific paradigm of the connection of the so-called spiritual with physical. It's like one infinite being, but you can concentrate only on something particular because you're in a physical body. You can see something particular, you can hear. This gives you the ability to be in the right place in the right time and do the right thing. This is not a limitation. This is a advantage. You're in the right place in the right time and you're doing the right thing. But with the certain set of your mind, you can contribute it for the best or you can ruin it. If you're acting from your ego, you're ruining it. If you're acting from your human essence, you can build this reality and change everything, and you can get this information how it works, and you see how it implements in the front of your eyes. So, like this, something like this.
Yeah, well, this is why I feel we're at such an important time right now in the human story, because we're still dominated by the old paradigm of science. And as someone who I'll give an example, and I think you'd appreciate it because you're a musician as well. Can't really see it because the lighting is really bad, but my guitar is behind me over there. And you know how it is when you're playing an instrument and you stop focusing on the chords and it just becomes natural. It's just a flow. It's just it. There's no thinking involved. It's just happening. It's just coming from you. And this is an example of that kind of Akashic records. It's that gathering of inspiration or information from the field and kind of moving it through. But I can't write down on a piece of paper the data. I can't give it to a scientist and say, here, this is why I can play the guitar like that when I'm feeling really relaxed. We can't do, there's no way to give them the information. And so that's why the old paradigm of science goes, oh no, 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 this is all silly, this is just nonsense, there's no proof that you have these ideas and that they're coming from another space. Where's your evidence? Where's your data? Where is the spreadsheets? And the thing is, that doesn't work with this type of intuition, this intuitional intelligence. It doesn't come with the information that the old paradigm requires. So we need to find a way to move society and to move science, most importantly, into that realm. And I think that we're kind of getting there. We're getting there with quantum computation and artificial intelligence. And the way in which we're progressing, to me, makes me think that at some point we're going to be able to prove the things that we're saying right now, in terms of, no, there is a field of information. You get information from this field. I think we will be able to prove to scientists that there is a field and that there is information and that these things happen and that we're all connected. And it's just, for me, it's very interesting, Timofey, because, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, the spiritual teachers have been saying, we're all one, we're all connected, we're all energy, everything is the one thing, all things are a conscious being, all things are this. And it's only now that science is beginning to catch up to that fact. And so science has dismissed this for years, you know, for generations, thousands of years. No, 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 can't be happening. And now they're getting to a point where it's actually becoming more clear that there is this this energetic nature to reality. So I just find it very interesting that science is the one that's having to catch up to the spiritual perspective that's been present for thousands of years.
I tell you more. I think that it can be proved, what you just gave an example of. Only you're not a scientist. You didn't put much effort into proving it. You're a guitarist. You're who you are. You just play and you intuitively know how to do it. And when you relax, you let go of thoughts in your head and you can play, because it comes from somewhere, as you believe, from consciousness, and it goes through your body. And it's one thing, as I gave an example with the keyboard, but only it comes to you and it manifests like you putting fingers in the right places and you're playing. But if you were a scientist, or maybe if there is a team of scientists, enthusiasts who would want to study this, I believe that they would find the proof that it works like this, and because of this, when he feels this into this inspiration, then it goes and works like this. But scientists are now engaged in something different. Maybe they're trying to invent how to build a more powerful rocket or a more powerful bomb, or how to, I don't know, different things. Just, it's not, you're just a living example of how it works. But if we apply scientific methods to it, I think there is an explanation, and it will not be so complicated. But one more thing, we did an experiment twice, and twice it was successful, of how your words and your emotions impact living cells. What we did was, we had three saucers, and there were seeds put inside, and we put them in the very same conditions in terms of sun, water, light, so they had the ability to grow seeds. With one little difference, one cup was not affected anyhow, it was just neutral. The second cup told her kind words, words of love. We sang songs to it. We wished them to grow faster. We wished them to succeed, live and grow. So we literally we spoke to them in kind words, and just held in our hands and wished them with saying nothing, wish them good, and so on. And the third one was a negative, like a negative cup. We gave to it our sorrow, our negative thoughts. We told it harsh words. So it was like a negative one. And the result was that the seeds in the positive cup grew faster and bigger. The neutral ones were also grew, but not so big and fast. And the negative one just grew very slow. And the second time we had the result just about the same. The positive cup, the positive seeds grew this big. The negative ones grew half this big. And neutral ones were the lowest. And the explanation to this is that positive emotions give you a lot of energy. And when you absorb it, you can grow and you can go faster. And when you give then your negative emotions, you give away to these plants, they can somehow absorb and transform this energy and they use this energy in their own way to grow. So in both cases, these positive cups, positive words said to it, made it grow faster and bigger. It was literally was this big and this. And it lasted for a week in both cases, the experiment.
Yeah, there have been a few studies like this done over the years that have proven that different emotional responses and different ways of treating a plant will actually will impact the way it grows, how fast it grows. I remember there was a study, and I can't remember which institution did the study, but they had a control plant, like you said, one that was neutral, but then they had one where they would play classical music, so it had classical music playing in the room with the plant that was growing. And then in the third room, they had like hard metal, like death metal music playing. And again, this actually did, and I love a bit of death metal, there's nothing wrong with a bit of metal music in my opinion, but it did impact the growth of the plant. And the one that had the best productivity was the classical music. And there are all sorts of interesting ideas around the frequency of classical music. A lot of classical music uses a certain frequency, and I can't remember what the number is, but it's a specific frequency that's meant to be very beneficial to human beings. And I find it very interesting because we are essentially just vibration and resonance and frequency. This is what Nikola Tesla said so many times, is that if we want to understand the nature of reality, we have to look at it as vibration and frequency. And everything, like you said, every sound has a signature, every sound has a specific signature to it. And there's that fascinating experiment, I don't know if you have heard of it before, I think it's called cymatics, where you get like a metal plate. Sorry, I just hit my microphone then. You get like a metal plate, and you put sand on top of the plate, and then you vibrate it, and it creates the patterns, the geometric formations. And you know, this is such fascinating science to me when you can see that the sound is creating this specific pattern and that that is the signature of that sound. And then you think of all of the resonations coming from a human being, the thoughts, the feelings, the sounds. It's all pattern, it's all music, it's all symmetry, it's all geometry. And that's quite a beautiful thing to me. And it's also interesting, I will say very quickly, that when you get into states of transcendental meditation, like deep states of meditation, or even psychedelic experiences, these geometric patterns come back and they kind of, you know, the walls around you will turn into these geometrics, these complex patterns. And it makes me wonder if you're perhaps seeing the underlying mechanics of reality, the underlying nature of reality when you're in these states, and it appears to us as beautiful geometry.
Yes, that's a great example of interconnection and the evidence of how everything vibrates at its own frequency and can be explained through resonance. Our communication can be explained through resonance of certain frequencies. And by the way, Tesla said that he had friends in the universe, which provided him with his brilliant ideas
He did
in
say
his
that.
dreams. Maybe that those were extraterrestrials.
Maybe. I mean, what are dreams? What is the imagination? What is that? We don't really understand what that is, and that again is something that really fascinates me, is we are these we're these weird creatures, these human beings that have access to a non-dimensional space, a non-physical space, the imagination, this realm of the imagination. It doesn't exist in the physical world, but everything that we've put into the physical world, this microphone, the clothes I'm wearing, the laptop that I'm using to communicate with you, all of this has come from the imagination. So we're very interesting creatures because we seem to have the ability to reach into a non-physical space and draw things out of it and then put them into reality, to build them into reality. Nothing else on this planet is doing that. We're the only ones that are doing that. And it makes me wonder what exactly it is that we're up to here, Timofey. It's very strange.
Exactly. And that's why they say that ideas rule the world.
Yes.
It's really ideas. So, what is in your imagination, in your consciousness, you pick any idea and it captures your attention. And then you manifest it here. It's really this seamless flow. Only it has its inertia because of the physical space, because you need time. You need time. I guess it's the more dense is the reality, the more time you need to manifest it. So in the realm of ideas, it's instant. How many thoughts can you think in 1 second? Infinite. And how many things you can do in 1 second here in the most dense physical world? Not so much, but who knows? If we as we evolve, then the time can also unfold. Maybe it's not linear, it's 3D, it's many D, I don't know. As well, as I said before, maybe the point where you apply all your knowledge and force, it's right here and now. But it does not cancel that the time is multidimensional, because maybe you right here and now you think from somewhere in the future or from the past, and as the pilots say when they have to, when they have an emergency and they have to catapult, the time slows down and they have all the time in the world to think what they have to do and make the right decision, turn on the right switches and catapult. So the more things are going on, the more time expands. Maybe the more, I don't know how it works. We have to study it. It's the new paradigm. And the evidence of it is enormous. As I said, the pilots, and maybe in our real everyday lives, we also had this things of multidimensionality sense, this sensation of multidimensionality of space and time.
Yeah, one of my theories, I guess, one of my thoughts around this is that perhaps we come from the realm of ideas. Maybe that is what people consider the afterlife, or, you know, all these interpretations that we have. Maybe the realm of ideas really is where we're from, and the human being is kind of just like a bridge that bridges us between the physical and the non-physical, between this reality and the imagination. We're almost, you could see us as just kind of like a vehicle. The human body is just a vehicle, and it's a way for the realm of the imagination to come down and focalize into a specific little thing called Jay or Timofey. You know, these are two individual human beings, but perhaps in reality we're just this creative imagination energy in the form of a human being, and that we get all of our ideas, all of our inspirations from that place. This, again, going back to Nikola Tesla, one of my favorite quotes from him was that at the center of the universe there is a core from where we draw all of our inspiration and our creativity and our thoughts. I haven't found the location of this core, but I know it exists. And that was one of Tesla's quotes, that he can't tell us where this core is, where this kind of like focal point of inspiration is, but he knows it exists. And human beings kind of seem to be a bridge between the physical and creative energy, creative imagination.
It's a great idea, and I have to add something to it. What I'm 100% certain of is that our body, as we call it, physical body, is not a vehicle. It's you. It's you. It's not your vehicle. It's really you. And but it's not only your physical body that is you. Like, as I gave you an example of keyboard, like your physical body is this keyboard, but you are infinite beyond this keyboard, one way and the other way in all the ways. So it's just manifested here, and you can see with your eyes and hear and smell and feel because of your physical body. But at the same time, you are in your imagination, you are in your reality of thoughts, in your perception, your connection with the universe. Only maybe you're not aware of it, or you do not control it yet, or maybe you can control it to some extent. But this is you, seamless, only on this range of vibrations. Only we are used to use our feelings, eyes and ears because it's so we are used to it. It's just historically. But as we evolve, as we take away, or I should say, we as we transform our ego, we get to this next point when we see that we're seamless and with this realm of ideas, and we have to be very careful with what we manifest, with because when you get to this level of power, when you can manifest any idea, you have to be very careful and ethical to not harm life, to not ruin things, because as we understand this multidimensionality, we understand that we can only harm ourselves. We cannot harm other person because you feel empathy, you feel the connection, and you feel like you're one. And I guess that's what the prophets were trying to say, that we are one. This empathy that the other being is as important as you, and he or she has its purpose, and you cannot harm because you understand that you are one. Maybe that's this my guess.
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting perspective, and I agree with you. I think that we share a very similar view on reality, and I hope we're right because it definitely makes me hopeful about where we might go if this is the kind of truth that we're going to discover. And before we finish up here, I have some questions just from my Patreon supporters. Would you be happy to take a few questions from some of my Patreon members?
Sure, I would love to.
All right. Well, the first one we have is from Mike Hotel, and he wants to know, kind of changing it up a little bit from the consciousness stuff, but what are your thoughts on the original Apollo 11 mission when the astronauts Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins returned from the moon? They had a conference. I don't know if you saw this conference where the media was asking questions, and the astronauts seemed to be very uncomfortable, very quiet. They didn't seem to be very happy. Just your opinion, why do you think they were acting so strangely once they came back from the Apollo 11 mission?
Well, there are several theories in Russia about Americans going to the moon, maybe conspiracy theories. But there is one great research and study of a man who worked 20 years in the most recognized Soviet and Russian movie making institution. He was I don't know how to say it in English, but he was in charge of putting the scene together and filming it. So he
Director. I think that would be the right
no, not director, but
producer or
maybe the cameraman,
Oh,
but
okay.
who is in charge of lighting and putting the scene together, how
Right,
it
right.
looks and to how to
Cine
film it.
Oh, the
Cinematographer, yeah,
cinematographer, that's the
cinematographer,
one.
yes. And he analyzed all the footages from the allegedly moon footages of American astronauts on the moon, and from the perspective of a cinema of a, of the cinematographer. And it is an interesting lecture for about 6 hours. He also analyzes how those astronauts behaved at the press conference, how they felt when they came out of the airplane, just being put out allegedly of the spacecraft and presented to the audience, and how Soviet cosmonauts look like when they were for 5 days in space. So he compared all this, and in a very interesting and proving way, he showed that the footage was filmed by Stanley Kubrick, who was famous at that day, the director Stanley Kubrick, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh, of
So,
course, of
and
course.
in his movie Shining, he put hints of the fact that he filmed, he put some hints of the fact that he filmed that footage, and he also analyzes this movie when the boy has the sweater and there's rocket and the number 11, some little details by which Stanley Kubrick said that he was filming it, but he couldn't say about it publicly. So this interesting documentary, which lasts for 6 hours, makes you realize that the footage was filmed and how it was filmed, and then this man reproduces this scene in his own studio, and that maybe they really have gone to space and they have gone to the moon, but what they saw there and what they filmed there never got public. And to have a good image in the front of American public and at the background of the space rivalry, which was at that time, because Soviet Union was first to go into space, Yuri Gagarin, and Americans had to be first to go to the moon. But maybe for some reason they failed, or they didn't make it all the way. They had to make this film and to present it like they were there, and that's why this astronauts look kind of sad, and they don't really want to answer questions, or they were intimidated. If they would answer anything, they would be in danger. So this is one of the theory which is there in Russia.
Yeah,
I don't know if they were there.
and this is a theory that's in the West as well. It's a theory that a lot of people subscribe to and believe in. I personally, if I had to put my cards on the table and say what I think that the Americans did go to the moon, but I think that the footage itself is likely fake and not the actual landing footage. And there has been testimonies from astronauts who have claimed that when they arrived at the moon, that there were vehicles surrounding them, that there was UFOs surrounding them on the moon. Obviously, if that's true, that's not going to be something you're going to broadcast to the public. You don't want them to see something like that. So I think that it's possible. I think it's possible that they did fake the footage, because there have been experiments like refracting laser onto the moon and back, and showing that they've placed objects on the lunar surface. I would say that they have been up there and that other countries have been up there. But I do think that the footage is strange. I haven't seen the 6 hour conference, the 6 hour video. Maybe what is there a title for this? Is it on YouTube or is it on the internet at all?
It's on YouTube, but it's in Russian. And
Of course, yeah, of course.
one little detail is they prove and they say that the moon is really brown, not gray.
Oh, really?
And what we see that it is gray, it's because of some effects of atmosphere and the reflected light. Really, it's brown.
Maybe like the ocean looks blue, but it's not really blue. It just looks like it.
Something like this.
Yeah.
There is a whole proof for this in this documentary. It's very interesting. And how first images of the moon, of of a not manned craft which landed on the moon and took pictures. It was brown, the moon, the surface, and then they painted in different color in the internet. So interesting,
Yeah.
interesting theory,
Yeah.
and it makes sense.
Well, I mean, the video, the conference where the astronauts talk, it is strange. It is strange how they act and how they're behaving. It's not 100% right. So that's a good question. We've got one more question from Mike Hotel. He said, "Have you ever spoken to a cosmonaut or astronaut in private about UFOs, and have they ever told you that maybe they've seen something strange during a space mission or anything like this?"
I have talked to several cosmonauts in private if they saw a UFO, but those whom I talked to, they said they didn't see anything. But they said that there were some objects lighted, like flying, but they explained it as pieces of the International Space Station or some
Debris.
space debris. Yeah.
I want to thank you for coming on because it's always a great time talking with you. We have very similar ideas and interests around consciousness, around where humanities should go, about where technology might take us. And the AEU, the Association Ecology of the Unknown, seems to be very much representing the more expanded perspective on paranormal and UFOs and the impact of human consciousness. And I think that we need a lot more of that kind of study, because if you're only going to look at the kind of the nuts and bolts, the physics, the technology, the material, you'll be able to understand some part of this story, but I don't think you can understand the full picture unless you bring in these two sides, the science, the physics, and also the metaphysics and the consciousness and the intuition and all of the things that we've discussed today. So if there's anything that you want to say before we finish here, I will let you do that.
Thank you, first of all, that Jay, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and it's really inspirational. And final words of wisdom. I'm a fan of this method. Focus on positive. So whatever happens, what you focus on will grow. So if you focus on negative sides, they will grow. If you focus on positive things, they will grow. It's just a peculiarity of our attention. What we focus on, then we are there. And this thing receives our energy. So try to focus on positive. Of course, it doesn't make you something out of this world. On the opposite, it makes you in this world, because we are structuring this world. Let's structure it in a positive way.